Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. This is a special edition of the podcast where, sadly, today I'm thinking a lot about Sarah Black, who was on the show a little over 2 years ago and passed away on February 15th, 2024. I wanted to share again the conversation that I had with Sarah back in episode 153. Because it was a really excellent conversation. Sarah was one of the pioneers of the bread baking scene in New York back in the 1990s. And I don't know that she was as well known as some of the other pioneers at that time and around Amy's Breads and Tomcat Bakery and that kind of a thing. But my goodness, she was an amazing woman. And this conversation, I think, really, really captured that. She was this quiet and thoughtful and giving teacher. Of all the conversations that I've had and shared with you on this show, this is one of them that was a very quiet talk. And there's lots of space in this talk. And we went off in all directions and talked about family and talked about teaching and feeding people and bringing joy through the craft that we love. And it's one of those things where I feel so lucky that I had a chance to talk with Sarah in the past and that we have this moment in time that we can keep and share and cherish. I'm grateful that I got to talk with Sarah, and I'm grateful that this conversation exists. And I'm just very, very sad today. So let's listen to this again, and I hope this is a worthy addition to the tributes to Sarah and her legacy as a baker and teacher and wonderful human. But I've recorded these calls with people on their phone in a parking lot. And when I talked to Tara Jensen, she was in a pickup truck waiting for her husband, I think, at the dentist in the hills of Kentucky. And I'm like, how does this even work?
Like, that's a great story intro, though, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Very visual, what you just described. You and I share a quirky trait, which is perfectionism. I've heard you talking to Martin. I listened to that interview and I thought, well, we've got that in common. And that probably makes this even harder, you know? You think bread is hard to control.
Yeah.
People are harder to control.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's, I've enjoyed it because I get to not have an agenda. You know, it's like which is the best kind of conversation where you're just, you're excited to meet the person and you just, let's see where you want to talk it. Cause as opposed to an interview where, well, I want to ask you these questions. Right. And put, you know, it's like, well, that's not what this is. Yeah.
You're probably much younger than I, but I've recognized as I've gotten into my 60s, how the day has begun to lead me. It's not like I have to control everything anymore. And I find that collaborating with the day and not trying to control everything lends itself to getting things done more easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm 55. So it's like, I'm getting into that. And especially since my wife and I moved out to the West Coast a couple of years ago, I've really noticed it more because I'm not baking, so I don't have production to rule my day a bit. You know, it's like I haven't set an alarm in 2 years. You know, it's like it's like that's cool. But when out on the coast, like it rains a lot, especially in the wintertime. And so when the sun is out, I'm willing to throw everything off the end of the boat and get outside, right? He's just...
Well, how many sunshine days do you have?
Well, we're really lucky in Victoria. We're in this little isolated spot that we get a lot of sun. We probably get... We're getting close to 300 days a year of sun here, well, which is... It's only 20 days less than I got in the middle of the prairies, right? Like when we did the comparison.
And where did you live before?
I lived in Saskatchewan. In Regina, Saskatchewan is where I was born and grew up and lived my whole life, really.
Well, thank you. Your lovely accent.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, my son just lives across the, on the mainland in Vancouver, and they get a lot more rain than we do in Victoria.
That's interesting.
And up island gets a lot more rain, but it's just sort of how the winds come. So even on a rainy day here, you will get a couple hours where the skies don't totally clear, but you'll see a little bit of blue sky, and then you run outside. You know,
so that must impact your mental mood.
Oh yeah, right? Oh yeah, totally. I bought last winter. I bought one of these little the sun lamp kind of lights, you know, and I've got it on right now because you don't get a lot of daylight hours in the winter here. I don't know why. With daylight savings time and stuff, it really messes it up out here. And so, you know, it's dark at 6 o'clock. It's
starting here too.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean, our dog now goes to bed around 6.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We have our daughter's cat here, and she is like a full hour early now, like bugging us for supper and that kind of thing. And,
yeah,
you know, exactly. It's like, yeah, because they get it. It's like, I don't go by the clock. I go by the sun.
But it's the best time to be a bread baker.
Yeah.
In terms of using that cold, dark time to make something warm and happy.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And you're always going to be there for sunrise, depending on when it happens. Yeah. You know, sunrise can come at 8 and you're still there anyways. So yeah, it's good.
Exactly.
So I have to say that I've been wanting to talk to you for several years now. And when I finally reached out to you, I didn't know it was you. If that makes sense, because I've been following you on Instagram, and people that I've talked to over the years, you know, your name pops up once in a while, you know, and that kind of thing. And it's like, I was following you on Instagram. It's like, okay, yeah, Sarah's Breads. I'd like to talk to you. And then I read your book when it came out a few years back and thought that was really neat. And then I saw, you know, Sarah Black and the Bread Box. And I thought, and someone mentioned you just a couple, like I'd say a month ago. And it's like, oh, okay. So there's this new baker I want to talk to that's starting this thing called the Bread Box. And then, so we connected and set up times and that, and I started doing my prep. And I said, oh no, this is the person. This is Sarah. Yeah. So
the old baker.
Yeah. The old baker
started in the 1980s.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm triply excited.
Thank you.
That's finally talk to you. Yeah.
That's really kind to say. I was going to ask you why you wanted to talk to me, because I'm not as well known as many of the younger.
Sure.
Sarahs coming along, like Sarah Owen, whom I adore.
Right. Yeah.
But what I will say is, since selling my business, which was authentically me back in the 1990s,
right,
I haven't felt that sense of connection to what I'm doing until the Bread Box.
Okay. And
I've had a good career. I've wandered into some great jobs and some great places, yeah, but this feels real again, and it's been so gratifying.
Yeah. I'm really curious about the new project. So maybe we'll start with the new one. Then I'd love to hear about New York a little bit and ciabattas and the book and all of that. But what's the new project?
Well, it evolved over the COVID period. Yeah. I realized I couldn't teach my classes at Columbus State College.
Right.
Were all canceled. So I thought I'd reach out best I could with kits. And I started with a focaccia bread kit because it's such a manageable dough for beginners.
Right.
And it came in a aluminum pan. Oddly, it was beautifully a beautifully constructed pan provided a great bake. It just wasn't very attractive.
Okay.
It served its purpose, yeah. But we pushed it out there. A friend of mine, Jennifer Williams, who's co-owner of Weiland's Market, is my guru. Uh-huh. She helped me think about how products should appear.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in supermarkets. This is a very intimate, charming grocery store, family owned, but she's been very helpful. And she kind of poo-pooed the look, but they saw that it was just not me. And I took her impressions to heart and started trying to develop the look of a box that I wanted. And I finally got out of my own way and had a graphic designer come in, and he designed the label that you see, which mm-hmm. just struck me like lightning because it's so perfectly me. And if you ask anyone, they'll say the same thing. Oh my God, Sarah, that's just you.
Oh, wow. Really?
And the fact that I wanted to bring these gorgeous grains that are growing in Ohio to mm-hmm. Ohioans was so heartfelt that it all came together. And so we launched the bread box to 3 different locations in the Columbus area just a few weeks ago.
Okay.
They are starting to catch on. I think it's going to be slow but sure because it's a commitment. You have to make bread. You don't get to just buy bread to eat it.
Yeah.
Yet, I think coming up for this winter, I'm going to do the Winter Bread Project and just encourage everyone to bake bread at home. My box is sort of like a starter step. Just get your hands in the dough and then you're off and running to the races because that first impression of bread making mm-hmm. influences the rest of your life. And I just want you to get in and start and go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 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 So it's sort of like this, it's the baking kit, right? It's the, you open up the box and that's, there's everything you need to make.
Everything that you need plus a reusable pan, which isn't normally what I would choose, but it fits in the box. The dough that you make is the perfect amount for the pan. Yeah. Lets you make bread without having to have a knowledge of shaping.
Sure. Yeah.
That's coming. Shaping's coming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But what a neat idea, you know, because I find like I don't read all that much of the different food blogs and stuff that are out there, but when we really get into the craft, we can make it very complicated.
And
just in terms of like so many options. So many different ways of doing things, so many different sets of proportions. And it's like, if you want the starter kit, here's the kit. It's all there for you. Just do it this one way and see what you get. And then you'll get the, you know, you can do the advanced kit later, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also people are becoming aware of these grains. Well, what is turkey red? What do you mean by that? Does it have to do with turkeys is what my mom asked.
You know? Right. Sure. Yeah.
And I'm happy to help educate newbies about that.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm doing a class at Columbus State in December.
Okay.
And it's a 30-person class, but we're going to be in the amphitheater, which is a beautiful new amphitheater in the Columbus State College. And so that's going to be fun. But the goal is to just help people understand not only what the grains are and how to use them, but then how to mix, how to shape what the baking result.
Yeah. Will be. Yeah. Well, and I'm just thinking now, even finding those local grains for someone who's just starting out can be intimidating. Or do I need to buy like a full bag of the stuff to give it a try? And I'm just thinking of all of the barriers to getting started that you've broken down with the kit, right? It's like, I don't have to source my ingredients. It's all here. I don't have to buy
10
kilos, you know? Yeah, no, it's all these ideas kind of pinging around about how, you know, even they have a bunch of board game cafes in my city now. And I see the sort of like those, you know, I've walked into a couple and, you know, they've got the hard games, but now they've got the section of, you know, sort of the starter games, right? Like start with this one and then we'll work your way up to this one. Right.
Exactly.
And it's like, I forget who I was talking to years ago that said, you know, if I was teaching a brand new baker how to bake, I would not teach baguettes. Like that would be the last thing I teach. I would start with a flatbread. I would start with, you know, something.
Well, you're right, because your baguette's your calling card, isn't it? It shows you so clearly if you know your skills or not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 So the first thing I'll teach you is something that's designed to show all the flaws. It's like, what's the point? That's not right. Yeah. Oh, so cool. So cool. Well, are you originally from Ohio? Is this sort of hometown?
Here in Marion, and went to college at Miami and Oxford, Ohio, moved to Chicago for 5 years, and then moved to New York from there. My desire was to be a painter, but we landed in New York, and I realized the moment we landed that I sure didn't have that confidence.
Oh, wow.
And a good friend of mine was a chef, mm-hmm. and he was very excited and gratified by doing something creative and getting paid well for it. So I thought, I'm going to try to translate my skills to a different craft. And I tried pastries.
Right.
And I failed. I was the first pastry chef at Union Square Cafe.
Wow.
In New York. Do you know Danny Meyer?
I know who he is for sure. Yeah.
And I wasn't a very good pastry chef. And I tried line cooking with Jonathan Waxman at Jams, and I wasn't a very good line cook. And then Noel Comas opened Tomcat Bakery, and I was one of the first bakers, and we learned about bread making by doing and failing and doing and failing and
wow.
working hundreds of hours a week, and it was a good experience.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I remember Maggie Gelser's book, Artisan Baking Across America, had a chapter about Tomcat.
Yeah.
And I remember buying that book and just being fascinated, because that was the chapter that they started. She had a chapter, the very small artisan bakery. And I think it was Tom Leonard who was featured. And then it was like a very large artisan bakery, and it was Tomcat.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa. And so you were there right from the start.
I was there right from the start. I left for a couple of years to help open another bakery called Eche Panes.
Okay. Yeah.
Paula Olin, she was the head baker there. And then I came back to Tomcat and opened my own business under their wing, and basically helped to introduce focaccia and ciabatta to the New York City marketplace.
Wow. That's and so that was sort of the early 90s kind of a time?
That was, yeah. Like I have my resume here because I'm so old. I don't remember all of the dates, but I had my business from 1990 and sold it to Tomcat in 1999.
Oh, wow. Huh. What a time. Bread in New York then must have been wild, eh? Yeah.
I'm glad you said that. It was the most exciting time. There was a real renaissance of dining, but there was also a renaissance of baking. Bread Alone was up in Woodstock and La Brea out in Los Angeles. And it was all just beginning to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I came to this later. I came to this about, 2004 was when I took my oven workshop with Alan Scott, right? And learned how to build a brick oven. And so, and I have no memories earlier than that, but it was building because, you know, when we decide to take our summer vacation and drive to British Columbia for this workshop, it must have been a thing. But I don't remember what I did before 2004. That's sort of my start date.
Yeah.
But I remember hearing the stories, and you know, when I talked with Amy Sherber and learned about, you know, Amy's breads and the start there, it seems that same kind of time where there were like spaces that you could get that were tiny and decrepit and hot. But you could do a bakery in New York City, and I can't imagine anyone being able to do that now with the prices of everything. Yeah,
exactly right. It was so much fun to meet Amy and also Leslie Mackey.
Yes, yeah.
And on that note, I just wanted to let you know that we are hopefully going to be doing a Heritage Grain event in New York City this coming May.
Oh, how exciting! Yeah.
And it's just in the planning stages now. It was planned for June, the year that COVID happened and we had to cancel it. So all things ago, you'll hear more about this probably after the new year.
Okay.
You should come.
Oh, I would in a minute. Yeah, for sure. That would be amazing. I've only been to New York once in like 2018, and it was quite the adventure.
This would be a great way to come back. And also, we hope it'll become a reunion for all of our bread making friends, like Abe Faber and Christy Timmon and David from Dough Puncher down in Texas.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
David Norman and so many people we would love to see. So that's a part of this.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've met David. Who's amazing. And
he's a good guy.
And well, even Abe and Christy, when did I see them last week? It would have been Wheatstock in 2018. And I remember we sat down at lunch and because they had just sold Clear Flower. And it was sort of like, okay, how are you doing? What's that like? Yeah, are you okay? You know, yeah, they were doing well. So yeah, that generation of bakers, if I can use that term, really had a huge influence on me, you know, for sure. Like I remember I took a class from Amy in 2012 and took a class from Leslie in that went out to Seattle and she gave me a tour of the new setup for Macrina, you know, I just remember it was sort of by the Starbucks world headquarters or something, you know, this big building. And she introduced me to her head baker who had been working with her for 19 years. And I had my retail bakery at the time and we didn't have anyone stay longer than three. And it was like, I was like, how do you do, what is this magic that, you know, that, and that was, she was, it was so funny because she inspired me. We were doing a sandwich class and just the flavors and that she was using was great. But then when I met the team that they had built, and then I was like, okay, this is the real magic here. This is how you get to do all this other stuff. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, bread making, owning a bakery is a hard business. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it anymore. But to get employees to stay with you is the hardest part of all.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And it's, I really see a trend now, and I'm trying to figure it out, where so many of the people that I talk to see that as the sort of impossible dream and so they're designing businesses to be small because they worry that employees is like that's the challenge I can't get at.
Well, look at the restaurant industry right now. It's suffering because people don't want to work there.
Yeah, sure.
For many reasons. And, you know, I think that was always the scariest part about having an overnight business.
Yes.
Is my employee going to show up or do I have to work 24 hours today? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe that's the next sign of maturity is that I never got to, is that I was always the first person there. Right. And then you could see what's going to happen. And we had the most dependable and reliable and amazing team, you know, at our bakery. But so it was never a, you know, a risk, or are people going to show up today or not? But I always wanted to be the first one there just in case, you know, I never got that kind of confidence.
Yeah. It's in your blood, right?
Yeah. For sure. Oh, so cool. But
you bring up so many good memories. I mean, it's when the Bread Bakers Guild first began and we have events all over the country, or we'd all go to Europe together. It was quite a heady time. And as you look back, you realize just how much you learned.
Right.
From being around other bakers. It was so much fun.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to some folks just last night and they were asking about, well, you know, if they own a bakery and if I wanted to get away and learn more and kind of work on the craft, where would I go? And asked where I had been and stuff. And I said, you know, in a way it kind of matters, but as long as you're able to get there in person these days and to get your hand in the mixer and, you know, see how someone else does it, you'll learn things.
Yeah.
Right. So that the ability that you had or the decisions you made to get together as groups and learn from each other is powerful. And I can hardly wait for events like the one in New York and the guild events to get back to being face to face.
Well, I should also tell you that we're having a very potent panel okay. discussion.
Oh, wow.
And it includes Sharon Burns-Leader and okay. Amber Lamke of Maine Grains.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Amy Halloran.
Oh,
Amy
cool.
She's going to moderate. So we have a start. We haven't filled in all of the panel yeah. positions yet, but it's looking good.
Yeah. How cool is it that the number of women that are involved in this field, hey?
Very cool. It's been the determining factor, actually, because I had my doubts and I've swayed away from it on a couple of occasions. But I think when you recognize that something's your lifeblood,
yeah,
you have to stick with it.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Well, the women part.
Yeah.
That's been elemental and brought confidence and friendship to all of us.
Yeah. Well, I remember it was like 2008 when the guild, their whole theory or their whole program for, I think it was 2008, was the women of the guild. And so it was women teaching all over. And I went to a couple of the classes then and just realized I'm getting nostalgic as well now, where it's like, I just think back and of all the people that were teaching classes in 2008, how many of them I've got to know over the years now.
Well, you have a great roster of interviews. I've only listened to a couple,
yeah.
But I'm impressed by how many people you've met. That must be a fun job.
It is. It is. It's the best. It especially now that the first few were scary just because you're interviewing your heroes in a way, and you don't want to mess it up. And I've learned to relax, and I've learned to realize that if we can go spend time in a kitchen in Chicago and make sourdough and shape and stuff and just gab across the bench, that's all I want to do here anyway. So it's like, just treat it like that and we're okay. You know,
Mark, you seem very comfortable talking. I would say you'd be a great moderator.
Well, thank you. Yeah. That's actually something I'm quite interested in doing once things get back to back rolling and stuff, and just help events out and share the mic across, across a panel or something like that would actually be a lot of fun. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. Sure. When you stopped your business or sold your business in 99, is that kind of when you got into teaching then? Or how did you make the switch, I guess, from running a business to being a teacher?
Well, Tomcat gave me a hefty non-compete, which meant
I
couldn't make bread in the New York City region. And it just turned out that there was a Whole Foods down in Georgia, Alpharetta, I believe, where Amy had been consulting, but she couldn't continue and handed it over to me. So that's where I started. I consulted with them for a while. I consulted with Pepperidge Farm for a few days.
Oh, wow.
Where else? Whole Foods Market. Oh, I said Whole Foods. Giant Eagle.
Okay.
They are located in, their headquarters is in Pittsburgh, and I helped begin their supermarket bread program.
Wow.
And it was, challenging and sometimes exciting, sometimes exasperating, but it was work
while
I was looking for what I really wanted to do. And then after September 11th, a school opened. It was a workforce development school called the Artisan Baking Center.
Okay.
And luckily, I say luckily because it was hard to find work at that time for anyone.
Right. Yeah.
They were looking for a bread program director and hired me to help teach those who have lost their jobs a different skill. In fact, we helped teach some of the survivors from the World Trade Center kitchens. The name, it's escaping me.
Okay, but the kitchens in the buildings in the towers.
The restaurant at the top of the.
Oh, okay.
Everything was destroyed, of course, and so we helped train the remaining cooks to have better skills, and we helped find them jobs.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Windows on the World. Thank you.
Okay. Windows on the World. Great. That's remarkable. Especially with, the anniversary this year, I've been reflecting back on that and the ripple effect out of the tragedy and just sort of, people out of work and it just kind of, and nowhere to go back to and all of that.
It was a desperate time for sure. It was a desperate time.
Yeah. It's very much, I think, I don't want to draw parallels to the two events, but it's, I'm sensing that sort of figuring out how to move forward now is kind of what we're doing as well, right? With COVID that isn't an event. It's just a fact of life. It seems, it just keeps on going.
It's important that you bring that up because I actually canceled one of my classes at Columbus State back. It was to take place back in September because I didn't feel it was safe enough for me yet. I had the responsibility of taking care of my 91-year-old mother.
Oh, wow.
Whom I live.
Yeah.
That's why I'm still here. And so I can't afford to be sick or to pass.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
I'm constantly thinking about that aspect. I mean, I'm one of the few who continues to wear her mask in supermarkets or in the public.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
One of the reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. It's thankfully it's still mandated here, mask wearing in public spaces, not outdoors, but indoors. So if I go to the grocery store, I have to mask up. And if I go out in the hallway here in my building, I have to mask up and that. And it's been like that since August again. But I find it takes the pressure off. Some people are upset, but it's at least it's like, okay, this is the way we're gonna do it. We're just gonna do it.
I know. I've had looks that could kill.
Sure.
And thank goodness I'm wearing a mask. They can't see my mouth. My lips move telling them where to go.
Oh dear. Well, and you were talking about the working with now some larger companies opening, like at a Whole Foods or a grocery store or those in sort of the in-house bakeries. How is that? I'm really curious how that's different or when you think of setting it up for them, how is that different than say what you were doing in your own place?
I felt like the whole mindset was different.
Mm-hmm.
I sense that in the quote unquote artisan bakery model, the bakers that were working with you or who had applied for jobs were all genetically mapped the same way.
Okay.
Meaning we all have this innate sense of passion and a good work ethic and the desire to create. And I think coming into, for example, Giant Eagle, they had a model that was completely different from the model that I was working from.
Mm-hmm.
It was more about do the job, do it correctly, go home.
Right.
There wasn't that same kind of passion to make something new. There wasn't that kind of excitement. It was more of a burden.
Yeah. Yeah. And more just, I'm assuming just more tell me what to do as opposed to help me understand what's happening. It's just sort of, here's the steps, do the steps.
I don't mean to paint a broad
brushstroke.
Whole Foods was not like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably because we were starting from scratch with a new program at Giant Eagle, which, anything that comes in new is always controversial.
Sure.
And challenging. And I think their program is actually doing well now.
Okay, nice. Yeah.
I hope.
Then if you're setting up other people's bakeries, is that kind of the transition into teaching for you then?
No, I think the transition into teaching came about for the fact that I was missing something authentic about myself.
Okay.
I hadn't found it. Didn't know if I was going to stay in New York. And Amy and I, who have been very good friends for, over 20 years,
sure,
decided to do classes together.
Oh, cool.
And we taught together for, I guess, my last 2 years in New York. It was when she still had the actual physical bakery in Chelsea Market.
Right, yep.
And so those classes were so much fun successful. Towards the end of that partnership, I got called back to Columbus,
right,
which I thought was perfect timing for me to leave the city.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of go back home.
Go back home. I hadn't anticipated living in my childhood home as long as I have, but circumstances being what they are, I'm needed here.
Yeah.
And my father has designed a beautiful garden and backyard, which is the solace in the summer. And it's just 45 minutes from Columbus, so it's manageable.
Okay, okay. And so both your folks are still around?
No, my father died 12 years ago.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, and my mom is 91 and mm-hmm. still a Spitfire, but losing her vision and her hearing.
Sure, oh yeah.
So I'm her eyes.
Yeah, no, I gotcha, yeah. My dad's 83 and he's back in Saskatchewan still, and it's tough, you know. Since my mom passed, he's remarried, and so, you know, there's the two of them still, but they're still in the farmhouse south of Moose Jaw, kind of thing. And I worry about him when winter comes, and you know, does he have the neighbors for support? But he's so fiercely independent that
I bet you grew up that way, right?
Independent.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Canada seems to breed that, does it not?
I don't know. Like it's you stayed close to home, and you kept an eye on your family, but you gave them their space, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's a great way of saying it.
Yeah. Because I grew up in the city, and when my parents, when they had enough of the city, they bought my grandmother's farm just south of Moose Jaw. And my grandma was still there. My grandpa had passed, but she was still there. The land was kind of rented and she was still living there. And they lived together for a while until grandma moved into town, right? And into a senior's home in Moose Jaw. And I think, honest to goodness, that was the most stressful time in my parents' life. It was, you know, you're in your 60s now, and you're late 50s, and you've moved back in with your mother.
And so, I will tell you, I think I could probably easily get married now.
Okay.
Whereas before, you know, I never compromised.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I've learned about that.
Yeah. Oh, good.
First time in my life.
Oh, wow. And so Columbus, it's sort of Columbus State University. Is that right? So it's like
Yes, Columbus State Community College. Columbus, and they've just built this brand new facility dedicated to Cameron Mitchell, who is a big restaurateur here.
Okay.
And the amphitheater is where we're going to have my class, but we chose that for the fact that it probably seats over 100 and people can spread out.
Right, yeah.
And it's not quite as confined or dangerous.
Yeah. Is your class sort of part of like a pastry arts program or like a baking program?
No, it's a recreational
program
called The Mix. And they're
interesting.
Yeah. They started it. I mean, I helped them start the bread classes there a couple of years ago, and then we shut down.
Right.
And now they have a huge roster of classes. A lot of the students that attend are naturally interested, and they're doing very well. I mean, their classes seemingly all fill up. And I think I have a 30 person limit. I think we've only got 8 spots left. So that's good to know that.
Yeah.
There are still people willing to come and take your class.
Oh, sure. Oh, and that's what a treat for, you know, for like a recreational baker to have that facility to work with, and a teacher like you to work with. That's really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, you asked me about teaching earlier, and I find that I'm not bragging, but I am a good teacher. And I think it's because I'm so invested in everyone being able to feel what I feel in terms of the satisfaction. I mean, if you're making bread, and you know this, Mark, you're focused only on that and the world just sort of fades away. And it's such a special, quiet, necessary time. I mean, what drew you to bread making?
Well, my career up until that point was, you know, sort of very corporate technology and then sort of sales and marketing. And it was always working with other people, always influencing other people, and what I called always head work. Like I was always up in my head, you know, trying to figure things out or figure a way forward or how am I going to convince people of this? And I just wanted to do something with my hands. And then why it was bread for me was because of the sourdough culture or the yeast, this thing was alive. And so I could influence it, but I couldn't control it. It was alive right up until the last minute. And I just thought that was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
That I'm working with this living thing, which is why, like, I'm still like, I'm fascinated by croissant dough more than puff pastry, just because there's yeast in it. And it, you know, I don't know what right. it is, but that whole thing, that's what got me into it. And then what kept me with it to the point now, whereas I don't think I'm nowhere near the best craftsman when it comes to, you know, I know what I know, and I know more than most, but not as much as many, many people. But for me, then it was all about the connection with the people I was feeding. Like it was just, I get to make this thing and I get to bring joy to other people.
They don't judge, right? They just love the bread.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They, and you know, after years of apologizing for batches that weren't quite great, you know, someone finally convinced me to like, you, I do not see what you are seeing. Like you're saying this is not as good as that. I don't see that. I just see great stuff. And it's like, oh, okay. And then I realized like, they're just so happy to be able to get this. And the stories they're telling themselves about, yes, who they're buying it from, but what they're getting and what it's like. And that is four levels beyond anything that I'm doing. Like it's all amplified. And so it's a very, the craft and then the fact that it's, you're feeding other people, it amplifies beyond the thing that you're doing. It becomes bigger than that. And that's what I love.
Bigger than you. It's,
oh yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah.
You couldn't have said it better.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. And so that's the magic for me. And what I found is that, you know, okay, maybe not everyone that I've talked to has sat down and thought about it as much as I have. And maybe that's my curse, is I think too much, but every single person I've talked to on the podcast or bakers and other meetups and that, they're on that same thing. They're like, I've not met anybody that says, I want to make the technically perfect or objectively perfect loaf. It all comes down to, I want to make good stuff to feed other people. And that's where I realized, yeah. Oh, that's the people I like to hang out with. And that's, we're on that same journey. Yeah.
I had that as my philosophy until I started the bread boxes. And now it's more that I want people to learn.
Yes.
What I know. And yeah. Experience that joy.
Yeah.
It comes with age.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and it's like, and I can't make it, like, maybe I can't make it anymore, or I don't want to as much or whatever, but it's now what can I do? And, but even so, like, you know, I think you're a very thoughtful person, or that's the impression I'm getting. And I'm going to go back to the bread box. It's like, there's thought that went into, okay, if I'm going to teach somebody, but I'm not even going to be there, what's the best way that I can do that? And it's like, so you start making decisions based on that, because it's, you know, and I all I'm saying is that someone else with a different vision is going to say, first and foremost, what will make people buy it? You know, what'll make people buy the box? And now, and then it's a different conversation to say, what will get people to bake what's in the box, right? And that's a, you know, it's connected, but it's an extra step.
It's a different way of thinking. And like I said, I'm not quite sure yet how to get people to be as invested in buying the box as they were with the bread. I think it's going to take some time.
Yeah. I used to teach classes back in Regina with
sort of through the community association over winter, like after we closed the retail bakery. And I realized that 90% of people that were coming to the classes were customers that were still buying my bread out of the backyard, right? They just wanted to hang out for the day and learn, you know, learn a bit and that kind of thing. And they were never going to make their own bread. They, you know, there was a couple of folks that's like, I'm here because I like what you do, but I want to figure it out and do it myself. I was like, great, we'll geek out. And the rest enjoyed it. And maybe once or twice a year they would make it, but they never missed a Saturday in my garage. So it is going to be kind of interesting to see how this, I'm hopeful that you can get folks actually making the stuff.
For me, it seems like the key is to have an event like the one that I'm doing at college where you interact with your potential customers, or the box for this class is a part of the class.
Yeah.
And it seems like the best way to kind of get people interested.
Yeah.
That might be the mindset going forward.
Sure. Well, and it could also, it would make a really good gift, I'm thinking as well, for the person. I know so-and-so really likes to bake. And so that's something that would get them, give them something fun to do. But then it's like, if they can connect up with you after the fact through a class or, you know, and kind of step one of something, you know, of their step one of their journey, I guess. Oh, well, I should ask. So has the first box been released yet, or is it still kind of in the almost? Because it's just
They're out in the world. And it was fun. I had a DMail on Instagram last night from a young woman who's French, moved to America from France, and she just bought my box. And I thought, I'm happy, you know.
Oh, wow.
That's a nice connection to make.
Yeah, for sure. And so, that's really neat. Now, how long has it been out in the world now?
It's been, I think, 3 weeks.
Wow, so cool. Early days.
And I sense that come Thanksgiving or Christmas,
yeah,
they might have a different angle in terms of gifts.
Sure.
The cool thing is you can bake the bread in the little pan. It fits right back in the box. You close the box, put a ribbon on it, and it's the perfect gift. Right?
So cool. Oh, that, what a neat idea. What a neat idea. Well, I'm excited about that. I really am. I'm going to figure out Instagram a little bit more, and so I can follow along and see how it's going for you.
Well, it's a very simple marketing scheme. Yeah. You know, you can put stories up or you can show photographs. Yeah. That's my only outlet. I'm not on Facebook, so that and word of mouth for now.
Cool. So cool. Oh, well, it's been an absolute joy talking to you, Sarah. It really has. And thanks for
you too. You're very easy to talk to.
Oh, well, thanks. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. And if we can, I do want to just mention the book about I get it backwards all the time. One dough, 10 breads. It's not 10 doughs, one bread. And just having talked with you now, it just makes a lot of sense to me about the whole premise of the book and what I loved about it. It's like, okay, if you learn how to make this one basic dough, you can go off in all these different directions, right?
Exactly right. And in fact, we're thinking about doing another class in the new year called One Dough, Three Breads. I introduced the book for the fact that a baguette, focaccia, and ciabatta are only changed by their hydration or their water amount.
Yeah.
And that sort of gives people a whole new way of thinking about dough.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is helpful in terms of learning new breads and learning new shapes.
It just lines up with everything that you're doing here about like, how can I help people just sort of get some insight into the magic here, and that it's the versatility and in a way the simplicity to get started. And then you can always go deep and start adding layers of complexity on afterwards. But for now, those first things can be very simple.
That's well said. And also for the fact that every student I've ever taught has a fear of baking.
Yeah.
So let's eliminate that fear, and then the world's your oyster, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks again. I really appreciate the time. And it's so great to get to know you a bit.
Many thanks. It was great getting to know you too.